This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Water should be the most valued resource on the planet, but too often it is the most abused. There are massive, slow-rotating whirlpools of floating plastic trash in the oceans. Farm fertilizer runoffs pollute the Great Lakes and are causing huge dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. Underground water sources are too often polluted by industry. And then there are the oil spills. There is a professor at Michigan State University who is well aware of these water issues and a whole lot more. In fact, she's so well recognized as a global water expert, she received the Stockholm Water Prize at the United Nations World Water Day in Geneva. That prize is the world's most prestigious water award. Joan Rose joins me now. First of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. It's such an honor, and it's an honor to be on your show.
The water problems I just mentioned didn't even go into water waste and water shortages, which are becoming more and more serious, something we don't always think about in the Great Lakes region. What's your assessment of how we, and when I say we, I mean the entire world, are dealing with our most precious resource?
My view is that we've been on a continual downslide of water quality around the globe. And we know quantity and quality are linked. And we've been dealing with quantity for quite a while, just because you have to have water. We know how to measure quantity, and we have global maps around quantity, and we have international, you know, agreements. But water quality is very, very complex. I always like to think about water quality being influenced by what we do on the land and driven by climate. We know we have new emerging contaminants. We have a global transformation of our landscape. We have more people. We have more animals, including cows and pigs and chickens. All of these things are contributing to a global impact and the deterioration of our water quality.
You know, a few years ago, the Environment Report at Michigan Radio did a series called 10 Threats to the Great Lakes, and we ended up taking about 30 pieces to cover those 10 threats. I mean, I'm just wondering, what is the biggest threat to water generally that we're mostly ignoring?
Waste and waste management. If you think about both human and animal populations, the percentage that live very close to a water body, you know, we've got 80% of the global population within 50, 100 miles of these shorelines. And all this waste is entering into our water environment. It's solid waste and it's liquid waste. And this is changing our ecosystem services. I think it's affecting the biohealth of our planet.
A lot of our sewer plants are frequently overwhelmed and dump raw sewage into the rivers and lakes. We can't seem to get the federal funding that was once available to revamp these sewer plants. Why have we become so lackadaisical about water?
Yeah, I think this is one of our problems, this complacency. When the Clean Water Act passed in the 70s, that was probably one of the most important laws that protected public health and provided funding and incentives for transforming our infrastructure of any law. 40 years later, and we're saying, all right, we have an infrastructure problem. We have more people. And on top of that, when we get a lot of rain, our wastewater systems are overwhelmed. So their hydraulic retention time goes down. They don't stay in the wastewater treatment plant long enough. We're not getting the treatment we think we're going to get. We're discharging a lot of partially treated or untreated sewage into our waterways. In addition, this non-point source, you know, when the Clean Water Act got passed, it talked about non-point source.
And that's agricultural runoff and so forth.
It's agricultural runoff. It's maybe this widely distributed septic tanks. You know, we didn't have the tools to address it then. But now we're developing these new approaches. We really have the technology to go out and start doing better diagnostics.
But do we have the political will? I mean, we saw Toledo's water supply have to be shut down because of this very problem, and still nothing's really been done there. There are some half-hearted efforts, mostly volunteer, offering farmers and others money to maybe possibly reduce the amount of fertilizer pollution in Lake Erie. How are we going to deal with this?
I think the political will is at several layers, because when we identify the actual problem and we say, oh, it's not just, oh, we have these nuisance blooms in the dead zone in the Gulf, but you've got to shut down your water supply. There is political will at the local level there. obviously, in the region because of the impact. In the Keys, when we found viruses, human viruses that were going to affect people's health in these canals next to these million-dollar houses, that affected the local political will. But to take care of the problem, we've got to raise the awareness and gain state and federal political will. We've got to raise that bar up because the calculations that I've done to fix our infrastructure over the next 20 years, if the people, we ourselves, were to pay for it, it would cost every man, woman, and child $80 per day for 20 years to fix it. That's just to fix, not to maintain and put in innovations. We know that this needs both state and federal partnerships. We need to think about better policies, new technologies, incentives for innovations. This is what's going to move us forward.
In the past, experts have told me we just don't price water correctly. It's so cheap that we waste it because, you know, it's only going to cost a buck or two. Yet in a city such as Detroit, for example, which has much higher rates, about double of the average city in Michigan, we're seeing water so expensive that people cannot afford it at all. They can't pay their bills. How do we find a balance to valuing water the way it should be and yet making sure that people who are in poverty aren't declined or refused or denied water?
That's right. Both water and wastewater services are something that is part of the public good, the commons, so to speak. We already know at the United Nations they have said there's a human right to water. But what we're talking about is access to water at our tap. That's safe 24/7. It's for the good of economic growth. It's for the good of our ecosystem services. We're quite connected to water. Just like any utilities, we have boards that look at these prices. We take into account our assets. So I don't think it's just that it's underpriced. It has been a problem with asset management. I think it's been a problem with long-term thinking of investment in this infrastructure and how valuable it is. Just like with trying to fix our roads and trying to maintain our schools, it's some of that same problem in terms of public good for our communities. In the future, if we think about cities of the future and water being part of that whole idea of clean water, safe roads, good transportation, access to internet, education, if we start to think of it more holistically and we start spending our dollars wisely to reinvent our cities with this in mind, we're going to have to think outside of the box. And it's going to take some leadership. I don't think it's just a matter of political will. But I think we need some really strong leaders to emerge that understand this and understand this is our future.
I don't think I can close an interview with a global water expert without bringing up Flint and the lead contamination of the water there. Is there a larger lesson for the world, for the rest of the United States from Flint?
Oh, absolutely. The lesson to be learned is that we are going to be changing water supplies throughout the United States and throughout the world. We're looking at desalination, reclamation. We've got to change water supplies because of climate or other reasons. We've got an aging distribution system. We don't have good diagnostics. We don't have water data for decision making. We've got to learn how to do that better and take the data we already know, the knowledge we already know, and share it. Why wasn't the water industry there sharing their expertise more broadly with Flint? You know, I'm part of the water business. I do water quality, microbiology water quality, and I was talking to the health department, been working with the health department in the state and in Genesee County. And there's such a struggle with the monitoring and trying to get ahead of the curve, do the preventive work, which is where public health is. While you're dealing with all these waves of problems that are hitting you, seems like one after the other. I think I had recommended early in 2015 that the state and federal government come into Flint early on and help. We can't do it alone. We can't address these problems. That's a lesson for all of the United States. We all need to come together and start talking about how we do this better, how we learn from the data we already have, the knowledge we already have, and then how do we move forward to think about the next 30 to 40 to 50 years? I mean, we know about quantity, and when quantity runs out, people move or they look for alternative resources. But often when quality goes down, you're still exposed. And as we saw in Flint, and this happens around the world, your health is at risk. So water quality is health. This can have long-lasting effects. We've got to be able to address this and do a better job.
These are all big policy issues we've been talking about, but what can we do at home? What are some things that we can do to make sure that we treat water with the respect we should?
Yeah, you know, when you talk to individuals, they do love their waterways. They love their beach. They love their lake. But surprisingly, only between 30 and 40% actually know where their water comes from when they turn on their tap. And they don't know where their water goes when it runs down the drain or when they flush their toilet. We've got to become more educated about our water systems. I like this idea of the one water, you know, the blue planet and the one water. If we have our own septic tank, our own well, we should be able to have access to state labs and other places where we can have our wells tested and our septic tanks maintained. And I think we have to participate in our community growth, the development along our shorelines, this mixed use, and really think about how do we make our own communities active, beautiful, and connected. You know, our waterways active, supporting economic development, parks, beautiful, because water's beautiful, and connected. How do we reconnect people to water, whether it's our drinking water or our recreational waters or, you know, our drainage stream down the road?
Joan Rose is a professor at Michigan State University and the recipient of the world's most prestigious water award, the Stockholm Water Prize. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.